From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in Runescale, Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk gaming and game development. I'm Alan Burns Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Martha Croy. I too make nice games.
In this episode, we talked with Andrew Eike, Chief Operating Owl and Cable Slinger at Alchemy Labs, to discuss the state of VR in 2022. And so if everyone's ready, let's start.
You read off the whole year, 2022.
Yeah.
You felt you had the time to do it.
I did have the time to do it.
It's the year of our Lord.
Okay, we got to redo it.
Welcome to the show, Andrew. It's good to have you.
Hey.
Thanks for getting us on the calendar, especially after you moved like 3 days ago.
I'm notorious for not checking my calendar appropriately. But I stuck with it. I'm here.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. For sure.
Appreciate that.
So speaking of things Alan said in the intro, you're the chief operating owl at Alchemy, and that's very cute.
Yeah.
Maybe just give our listeners a little quick overview of Alchemy and what you do there.
Yeah, so Alchemy Labs, we are a VR game studio. We've been around since really the dawn of this phase of consumer VR. We created a game called Job Simulator that many people know. We created a spiritual successor called Vacation Simulator. We worked on a game called Rick and Morty Virtual Reality, created that. And most recently, we created a game called Cosmonius High. And so Alchemy Labs, we believe in VR for everyone, no exceptions. And, we're kind of forging ahead with our vision of the future of VR and what it can be. If you don't know our games, our studio focuses on something we like to call VR the near. So it's a lot of like interaction, seeing how things work in the very close space, as well as being able to kind of manipulate and play out the promise of VR, right? As silly as it sounds, like pour yourself a glass of water, pour in another liquid, watch it mix together and drink that liquid. And then we're a humor studio, so possibly burp. Possibly barf.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I want to drop some praise on that as a concept, because I think you say the current phase of consumer VR, it is, when you say the dawn of, people are like, well, there was VR in the 90s. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I think going back to that time, the like everyone's searching for interaction models and what will be fun in VR once you get over the fact that it's stereoscopic, a presence. And I think Alchemy has done the best job of saying like what will be fun, and like, and because there's a lot of novelty to it, and you look at a game like Job Simulator and you're like, oh, it's tons of novelty all packaged in a box. Once you play it, there's a lot more like thought that goes into it, I think, that from the outside can look kind of just like a bunch of fun little like things to play with, little toy interactions. Mm-hmm. But I've always admired that level of depth that is, I think, hard for other people to achieve. And as by way of proof, my nephews, I bought them a VR headset after them for years saying every time I saw them, did you bring your VR, Uncle Mark? And I finally bought them a VR headset. And the first thing they wanted is like, can we get Job Simulator on here?
Yep.
It's the, and then like they were not interested in any other game.
Yep.
And that's a very common story we hear, right? Mm-hmm. From that. And I think when you really think about why it hits so well, and we hit really well with all ages, but you know, with kind of that adolescent and, you know, teen, not under 13, because that's not supported by the headset. So if somebody's playing under 13, I don't know about it.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
Basically, the younger you go, you got to think about, like, think of a Fisher-Price stove set, but it works, mm-hmm. right? And you can cut things and you can eat things, right? And so you really can play into that. And a lot of what we think about when we're designing our games is, like, what are you role-playing and how does that play out? And how can we really dig into that? And I think that's the depth, right? That's the hidden depth that you're looking at there is, right? On the surface, it looks like a bunch of little vignettes or a bunch of mini games or whatever you want to describe it as, these little interactables. But really what we're doing is we're creating a space for you to role play. Mm-hmm. And we're really trying to push you into that. And that's where the depth comes in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's too much VR, excellent VR experiences that are video games, but in VR.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like that's what you guys make. And I think that.
Right. And it's, you know, are you really doing the medium a service? I mean,
right.
I think, you know, we could really get into it. There's something to be said about if you design a controller like a gun, it shouldn't be a shock that all the games turn out to be gun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But which is most controller. But furthermore, right, like you know, I think it's very easy, and we find ourselves in this trap too, when you're making these games, to start using the design language of every game that came before you.
Right.
And while those have like lots and lots and lots of use, right, all of that language, you need to also take a step back and enjoy the novelty of VR, mm-hmm. right? And I love that you use the term novelty, because we still talk about it. There's still a lot of novelty.
If
you
look, oh, yeah.
In the, and we're kind of like preempting the topic that you're talking about, but in the larger industry, novelty is still by far the leader, right, in terms yeah. of how things sell. Mm-hmm. You know, Blade and Sorcery is like the number two game, like Beat Saber's number one game, Blade and Sorcery is number two game, right? And mm-hmm. and it's not an accident, right? Both those enjoy a level of novelty. There's something cool and fun about cutting things to the beat, and there's something cool and fun about a sandbox of sharp objects.
Yeah.
Right. And that's and Blade and Sorcery is a really cool sandbox of sharp objects with like rag dolls that you get to like stab with the sharp objects. And that's awesome. That is not, I'm not trying to be reductive, right? Yeah. I think that I'm trying to say that like that novelty really plays well to the medium. Mm-hmm. And that's where I see a lot of developers like start going wayward when they're like, oh no, but we need systems and systems, and you need this and this and this. Like you're playing some crazy JRPG X bullet hell. And it's like, people don't even know where they're standing yet. Like, let them get their bearings here.
Yeah. That's really fascinating. Because, like, yeah, because the medium, well, part of it, I think, is the medium is also relatively young, so you can kind of get away with more simpler games. People aren't expecting a lot of depth right now, right? Maybe? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know what I'm talking about, but
I think there's more to it, Steven.
No, no, no. I think you're right to a degree, but I also think that what we haven't found is the depth of our medium.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
In terms of the way that, like, you know, what were people doing with phone games, right? Mm-hmm. When iPhone came out, right? They were just doing exactly what you said, twin sticks, same progression system, same everything that made up the design language that made up that game, those games, was just put onto the phone. And then it turns out, what did the phone need? Still complicated and interesting and deep systems, but they surface completely different than what you see on like the PC.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think also the depth doesn't always come from like the actual systems design or the code.
Yes.
Because think about like a tabletop role playing game. Like sometimes you do throw out the rules and just kind of play in the space between players, mm-hmm. and like that is where a lot of that depth comes from. And I think virtual reality is like that, because you think of people describe. I mean, it's in the title, right? Job simulator. But like virtual reality games aren't really simulators in the way we think of as a game genre.
Yeah.
Where they use systems to replicate actual things.
Approximate.
Right.
Approximate.
Yeah. The approximation techniques are different in VR.
Right. Yeah.
And so you could see like, this is just literally picking up things. This isn't complicated. Mm-hmm. But actually, to do that in another video game, you'd need a lot of systems to do that.
Right.
And then you would praise that as having a lot of mechanical depth.
Yeah. Oh, that's a fascinating way of looking at it.
Yeah.
And there's the discrete input problem that comes. So we talk about this a lot with folks is who are new to the medium, is the discrete input problem is the pickup thing that you're talking about, right? Even in a PC RPG Western style one that's very complicated, right? You still go up and you press like E or you press X on your controller and you pick something up, right? And that's it. But when we're talking about this, like pickup could mean a million things, right? I'm going to click a button, but I might click it when I'm close to an object. I might click it when I'm far away. One of the things we found out with Rick and Morty is that people have all these different mental models for how things work in the physical world. And if you don't abstract them, it gets chaotic and we have to work through that. So the first thing you do in the Rick and Morty game is you turn on a dryer, right? And most people view turning on a dryer's knobs like turning a key in a car, right? Mm-hmm. It's a twisting motion with your wrist.
Yep.
But some people view it like turning a crank, right? They use the axis, the center spinning point, to like brace the edge of it. So it's almost like spinning a crank. So they do this kind of wide circle with their hand.
Oh, okay.
Right? Yeah. We have to support both of those, because you can't tell somebody, hello, you are 28 years old and you have turned a dial wrong your whole life.
Right.
Because it works. It like they when they turn the dial in a dishwasher or a washing machine, the dial actually turns.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not like their mental model is any less correct.
Right.
It's just different.
Yeah.
And so these are the kinds of things that like we're still figuring these things out.
Yeah.
We don't get, you know, and there was a time I talked to, there was a guy, Noel Bushnell, who used to work for Google, and I talked to him and he was like, we didn't even know if avatars could work. Like, you on a screen? Who are you? Are you a person? Are you this? And so it's like, I feel like we're in that state. We're like, we don't even know if this works. Like, you turn a knob? Does it turn in real life? What's a knob?
Yeah, because you have to engineer that feedback in, you know, there's the world gives you physical feedback.
Yeah.
You turn the knob, whether you're turning it like a weirdo with, you know, like it's a crank, or if you're turning it like a normal person when you're rotating your wrist.
Okay. Draw a line in the sand there.
Uh-huh. I'm biased. So
very, very strong opinions.
at me. I'm on Twitter. it's the meanest moment of Nice Games Club ever. Yeah, the world gives you feedback, right? Like, you turn the knob and the dryer makes a sound, or it starts, or, you know, you hear the water start moving. But all that feedback has to come, you know, that has to be built into your VR system. And it's so interesting because it feel like it would require you to be thinking about the real world in such a different way. Yeah. You know, I think any art work, anything when you're creating art is going to do that to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. But, like, so minute. I think the requirement for designing in VR must require you to get so minute with the way that you're thinking about things.
It does, but it also we can abstract certain things, right?
Yeah.
So when we figure it out, right? So, you know, the thing about designing objects in VR is it's closer to industrial design than it is to game design.
Oh.
And or to UX design. It's industrial in that, like, you're making a physical thing. So if you make your desk too tall, you're going to give someone carpal tunnel. Like, you have to deal with ergonomics, right?
Yeah.
If you do, so all our desks are adjustable in certain things because that's part of our accessibility push. But when we're thinking about these things, right, we're trying to think of an abstraction. And then if we notice ourselves doing the same thing over and over again, we tend to turn it into a system at that point. Mm. So dials, we found out after a while, it's like, oh yeah, we use dial all over. And sound is one of the biggest indicators, right? That's the cheater indicator for haptics. Your brain will make up, like, you can buzz the controller a little bit, that definitely helps, but your brain will count it if you make it sound right.
Yeah.
If the visual feedback and the audio feedback match, your body will be like, I turned that dial.
Right there. I mean, it's not dissimilar to how games abstract interaction, except it requires a totally different approach. So I've played a lot of VR games where I quickly learn, oh, there's lots of scenery and props in this virtual space, but I can only pick up the things that X, right? The game will teach you what is interactable. And some games go like a whole hog approach, and then, like, everything is, you know, governed by physics, and some things like, oh, that's definitely just molded into the wall. I can't tilt that picture on the wall, right?
Yeah.
I can't, you know, there's this cubicle wall, I can't wobble it, right? There are things, and you pick that up as a game player, you have the same instincts, but in VR, the negative feedback of getting that wrong, of like, I should be able to pick that up, is so much more of a struggle than in a third person action game where, like, you bump up against a potted plant and you act as if it's like a solid rock.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't really bump you the same way as a video game player, because you're taught about all of those abstractions for years and years and years.
Right.
But in the physical space, it's a little harder to take. And so I imagine that just the challenge is a lot harder and the solutions are a lot different.
Yeah, and our philosophy is very maximalist. And we believe that's the promise of VR, right? Is like, every time that the game has to tell you you can't and doesn't do that. So we talk about affordances a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The game affords you something. And if you believe you can do it, and this is part of our playtesting, right? We just watch people and we wait for them to have like a sigh or like, aw. and then we make it work. Right. And so we want to afford the player playing out the VR experience, because that's really what's magical about VR. And that's really what leans into it.
Yeah.
And we call what you're saying is that we summarize as what's the water bottle problem. Right. So when you think about VR, right, you have a water bottle on the desk, and if you can't pick it up, that sucks. And then you can pick it up, it has a cap, so you should probably be able to take the cap off, right?
Right.
If you pick it up, it has a cap, it has water in it, so you should probably be able to pour the water out. Mm-hmm. You should be able to drink the water. You should be able to put more water in the bottle, right? And so this is the rabbit hole, right?
How
far down do you go? And then alchemy's out is we use a joke, right? If we hit, like, as far as we're willing to go, we're like, we're done. So, like, Yeah. So like our most like famous like joke out was there was a door, like when we made Rick and Morty, there was a garage, and you can't make the garage anyway, but it what it is, because it's literally in the show. It's almost a character. It's
like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's a door, and it's like, oh crap, there's a door. That means there's a knob, and we have to turn the knob. We have to open the door. And the worst part about that would be like you go to open the door and it doesn't work, and it's like,
right.
Ugh, video games, you know? Mm. So we just made the knob pop off, because there's like a in-universe thing that just says real fake doors. The knob pops off and says real fake doors. And it's like, ha ha ha, that's fun. At least we tipped our hat to the player. We said, okay, yeah, we see you, right? We understand what you're trying to do, and we want to reward you for doing that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you use the language of the property that you were working with to deliver that message. Whereas, I mean, it aligns pretty well with, I think, the company's humor generally.
Yeah.
So maybe you got a little bit lucky there. But the task is when you do that joke out, or whatever out you have, it needs to be appropriate to the world you're building, right? To the tone you've set already. So that when you tell the player that they can follow you along with it, they can agree with you that was the right way to handle it, right?
Right, or just don't do it, right? That's the other thing. If you don't want a water bottle, don't put it on the table, right?
Right.
You know, we were talking about a picture, right? There's a lot of ways to mount a picture on a wall. If you make the art of a picture tilted, like, not to put somebody on blast, but like the thing that like got us is like, no, this is a famous example, right? It's like the Oculus rug for a long time was just folded.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
In Oculus Home, right? This is like everybody who plays VR was like, I'm in my Quest and I see this rug is folded on the ground and I can't unfold it. Right. Had they just not folded it, it would have never implied that it afforded folding or unfolding.
Right.
It would have driven nobody nuts. Right.
Right.
They would have been like, oh, it must be a piece of static geometry. It's just the carpet, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because in real life, we don't pick up the carpet a lot.
Right.
Usually not.
Yeah.
We try not. I mean, we try our best.
So you mentioned playtesting, and we're talking about like the way different people approach the same things. So I think this is a good segue to the question that Ellen, you wanted to ask at the top.
Yes, I did. I wanted to ask you, well, we talked about this briefly at the beginning before we started the recording, but what's the most embarrassing thing you've seen somebody do in VR?
So I have two, like light and heavy, right? Fun,
okay.
Right? The full gamut.
The full gamut. So, you know, in VR a lot of times we see people, they mistake, you know, the fact that they're in the world and they see it and they're like, we see a lot of like dropped controllers, mm-hmm, or kick things. But like, you know, the best is, you know, we had to do this whole, spiel, right? And you're like, hey, don't, there's like literally a laser wall that appears, right? And you make them walk to the wall, right?
Yeah.
We have a whole procedure when we do VR demos. So we're like, you see the wall, don't go through the wall. And then just somebody, when we were doing Rick and Morty, they wanted to go through the portal full speed and they didn't care about the wall. And they ran and they like dove headfirst through it as
Wow.
But it's VR, so it just went plop right in the ground.
Goodness.
That's adorable.
It's a testament to the immersion.
Yeah.
This one's quick though. Early days of VR, right?
Yeah.
It's really immersive, right? For your listeners who haven't done it, you should do it. Check it out, the Quest 2. But, you know, if you get a really good pair of headphones too, and you're like in the headset, like you're gone. You don't know where you are. It's like being in a casino. There's no clocks on the wall. Another world, right?
Yep.
Well, if you fart in VR, you fart in real life.
Oh.
And we put someone in a demo, and they were like, I'm somewhere else, and there's nobody around me.
Oh, gosh.
And they just let her rip. And,
yeah.
You know, but you can't just, like, start, like, gagging or laughing or anything, because then they can hear you, and they know what happens. It's very embarrassing.
Yeah.
I think it was like during press demos or something. So it's probably somebody we want to have like a conversation with after.
Oh, God.
Right. That's so interesting.
But, so we really relaxed them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it worked.
Yeah.
Immersion
works.
It's so interesting because I think one of the things that VR for me, like I this is maybe everyone has approached it differently, but like I don't play VR a lot by myself. I like to play when everyone takes a turn, like when I have friends over. And so the pandemic has really laid waste to a lot of that experience in my life.
Oh, yeah.
And not everyone is like that, but I think enough people are, because I think about that a lot when you're playing. Someone is playing a VR game and everybody else is on the couch waiting their turn and watching, whether it's being cast on the screen or not. And there's a lot of communication back and forth, and that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
But that isn't immersive, right? It's like you have a headset to the people in the van out on the street or whatever way you're doing your mission.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something to that. But it just when you describe that, like that blooper, and how people can be really, really immersed and just forget the world is around them. I just immediately thought, oh, that isn't how I normally experience VR, but I engineer that experience. Mm-hmm. Like to sort of deny myself that part of it, I guess,
sure.
Which is just another way of saying getting around to my point, which is that even when you make the game and playtest it, you actually don't fully know how people are going to be experiencing it.
Right.
Because there's so many variables outside, more so than other types of games. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, you could be playing in you have like tons of roommates and it's a big, busy living room or whatever.
Yeah.
Or you could have the sound on or off. There's lots of different variables in games generally about how you experience it, but more so, I think, in VR.
Right.
And that definitely has to go into like how people experience. And it may be feedback you never get from your audience.
Yeah. And I mean, that's why we like look really carefully at forums and Twitter and mm-hmm. social media, right? We have our Discord. I mean, we find out all sorts of crazy things that people do. Like for a while, there was this piece of software back when VR was super expensive where you could like hook your phone up and I guess two Wiimotes and you play. Our game didn't work for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
That's not going to work. Or you have somebody where they're like, I have VR in my bedroom and I have enough play space if I include my bed.
Right.
So I climb onto my bed, but you put something in the ground low. Because ceiling is not tall enough, right?
Yeah.
So it's like I have 7-foot ceilings. So if I get on my bed, I can't set the space to my bed height. I have to set it to the real floor height. So can you like lift up this thing that's on a chest on the ground?
Yeah. The picking up off the floor, that's a common one where it's like you didn't set it right or there's some issue, and then people just like they're just smashing their controller into the ground,
yeah,
trying to pick something up.
Huh.
You know, kind of the way that's evolved, right, is, you know, we originally did this kind of like hover system where it popped up, and then, you know, my opinion, Half-Life Alyx solved it, right? Mm-hmm. And they use this like fishing line thing where you like say you grab the item and there's like almost a line to it, and then you flick your wrist back like you're flicking a fishing rod back, and it flies towards your hand, you catch
yeah.
it there. Feels so good. We just used it in Cosmonius High. Just took it. I'm not going to pretend like we didn't.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But it was good. I mean, it solved the problem, right? Because you could do it from 2 feet or you could do it from 20 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And then those are like the interaction models, like the mouse pointer or whatever.
Right.
It becomes standardized. And that's the game designer has struck between, do I adopt standards or do I invent systems? Like, because... Even after this many years in this modern era of VR, there isn't a standardization for every kind of interaction.
Right.
It's just there's so much.
Control. No, I mean we're very far from standard. We've kind of standardized around a controller, but then there's hand tracking, which is a whole other
right.
beast. And you know, I think that we're figuring it out still. So
yeah.
That's why like I'm not certain that the mouse has been invented yet for VR or something
right.
like that.
Yeah.
Like we got the screen, right? We know that much. We got the keyboard, right? But I'm not sure we've finished with interaction method.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, right. All the controllers are the same now. They started out wildly different from hardware makers. They're all the same now.
Right.
And nothing's really changed. Mm. Like, it's not any easier from game to game, platform to platform than it was, I guess.
Yeah.
Partly because when they were all different, then they were designed around the common denominator. Right, a pointer and a trigger, and that's still kind of where we're at for a lot of like what the expectations are for minimal use for a piece of software.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And you know, this paradigm has predated the current version of consumer VR, right?
Cause yeah.
It's, you know, the Move controllers predated the current version of mm-hmm. VR, and the Wiimotes, and you can go back from there. So yeah, it definitely is. you know, it's interesting, and we have thoughts on where things are going, and you know, I'm sure everybody does, right? But you know, I'm just not as certain it's a, you know, take a DualShock and split it in half and
So there aren't these standards yet, but we've been having that conversation for a couple of years. Talk a little bit about maybe the things that you thought were solidifying that still remain wide open and tangled, or just what's changed since that, you know, 2016 era, where there were every, like, half the GDC talks about VR in 2017 were, let's agree on some stuff, guys. And I feel like we're done thinking we can get that done in a year as an industry. But what has changed since that conversation started?
So when you think of, like, computing, right, as a high level concept, right? Back in the day, there was a company that made copiers, Xerox, and then they came up with this thing called the UI, right? The user interface. They did it. Apple took it. You could say stole, whatever you want to say, right? Mm-hmm. But the thing is, right, that what eventually grew out of this was this concept of that they call widgets, right? Mm-hmm. Or basically common denominator interactable elements. And when you look at apps today, right, that is how we build apps on the phone, on the computer, right? And even in the modern day where we, like, secretly all apps are websites, right? Mm-hmm. Discord, we're on Discord, that's a website, mm-hmm. right? Running in an app container. But it still uses the same things. Mm-hmm. Buttons, drop downs, those things, right? Those are common elements, widgets, UI library, whatever you want to call them. We don't have that. Every VR developer starts with, like, engine, right? And it's like cool. So we're one step above, like, blitting pixels to the screen, right? We have like, here is a 3D space for you to work in, and you know where your controllers are and what buttons are being pushed. I guess good luck, right? it's like the mouse back in the era when you would, like, watch 80s. This is going to date me, but you watch, like, 80s, they'd be like, check out this person designing a bridge. And the mouse was, like, on a plotter thing, and it had, like, all these attachments on it, right?
Yeah.
So no one stepped up to even do that. So we have, like, all these struggles because we don't even have a common design language, right? We haven't figured that out. So I think what's changed is we've solidified a few things, right? We know that there is a subset of people that are, like, We essentially the battle for locomotion has ended in a stalemate of 30 standard.
Yeah.
Right? We're good. And no one solved it, and we're just gonna live with that.
Yeah.
Right? We got, you know, like, Alchemy's taking the stance that we're, like, teleport only, and I'll debate that till I'm blue in the face. Some studios are like, let's make fun of the teleport only people. We're running around. And some studios are like, you swing your arms and we're arm swinger. And that's
future,
right? Yeah. And, but all we've decided on is, like, no, it's nothing, right? Nothing. And
there are camps. Right? So, yeah. That's the best we can do.
Yeah.
And at best, the way that I'm seeing this play out is it's like third person controls, right? Mm-hmm. It'll be debated, like, from Mario 64 till, like, Assassin's Creed 2, it was like, no one knows how to do a third person. Make four more GDC talks about third person cameras, right?
Yeah.
And now it's much more stable, right?
Yeah.
So I think we've just accepted we're in it for the long haul on that one.
Yeah.
With the lack of widget libraries, we end up with a lot of laser pointers and stuff like that. So that's what you see, right? Is like this, like, people don't know how to build something in VR. And a lot of times my argument is the best way is the hardest, right? So diegetic design, right? Like, make the thing physical, right?
Yeah.
You have the physical medium. Why? The coolest thing is not to pop up a bunch of screens around you. I have a bunch of screens around me.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. A screen in my pocket. That's just life.
I have a screen on my wrist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have enough screens.
Yes.
Right? Like, why do my menus have to be, like, I click in some nebulous white space of what's clearly a website, but now in VR, and then flick my wrist up like I have a giant finger that, like, touches the screen, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the laser pointers are, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why at Alchemy, we try to be like, no, like levers and swing. Like everybody talks about like, oh, this steampunk world where everything's dials and switches would be so awesome. And then we're like, okay, here's the opportunity for you to make the steampunk world where everything is dials and switches. And they're like, you know, it'd be better the next generation, but where they can't touch the screen. Like just like, it's like, oh, look, it's the L-car system, but no, you can't touch it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you just point at it and you click.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I think that that's kind of going further into it. And so, one of my opinions is, right, the reason why you don't see a lot of alchemy style games, why you see a lot of shooters, right, is shooters have very simple interaction models. Mm-hmm. You, the button gets depressed a certain percent and out comes projectile of some sort, right? Or sword, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't even need a button. You just have sword. You swing sword, right? So somebody's got to figure out a lot of these things like grabbing and levers and stuff. And I think the problem that we have here, right, is that nobody wants to do it, right? It's like this standoff between everybody, right? And I've been in meetings with everybody and they're all like, oh, maybe we're thinking about it or we don't want to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So you end up with like Unity makes a system that's like half of what it should be, but not quite. And then Oculus makes a system that's half of what it should be, and Sony does, and mm-hmm. Unreal does, and everybody's kind of half made a system, and they're all hoping that somebody else's becomes the system so they can just like slink back into the bushes and be like, all right, they'll have to deal with the problems of maintaining the user interface.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, you can't, like, if I told you today, like, we do this all the time in VR jams, go and make a game with a button in it that you can hold, like a buzzer, mm-hmm. right? It's going to take you 8 hours.
Just
to get to buzzer.
Yeah.
Just to get to buzzer. So, this is where it is, like, some frameworks are, like, only on, like, certain angles, buttons work, right? And so that's what I'm saying is the issue, right? And then the poor people who are trying to unify it are, like, these, like, awesome open source folks or, you know, small companies that are like, here's our shot at it. And then it's like, every person who uses it is going to be like, so my boss told me I had to make something in VR. I've never made a video game before. Can you please help me debug Unity? Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's like, that's kind of the wall that we're facing is we're kind of stuck in this. There's like, no one's incentivized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring that forward.
Yeah.
Now, the darker side of that is, like, you could argue that, well, they'll just build their own framework and, you know, like, arguably, maybe Meta's building their own framework, but that framework's called Horizon, and then we all become a Horizon developer, and that's it, and that's our future, right?
Where does the standard stop? Yeah.
Right.
Right. You want your button buzzer thing? Sure, you can make it in 10 minutes in Horizon.
Yeah.
And you're like, uh-oh. Right? And but that's like a deeper level of it, a lot comes with it, right?
Yeah.
It's not like you go download the Windows SDK and you get the magic drop downs in it. It's like you're accepting Meta and all that comes with Meta.
Right. I wonder if as you described, the steampunk world of dials and switches. Mm-hmm. And I remember like early on a conversation about local motion and about interaction. There was kind of a brief blowback where it's like, you know what? Maybe abstraction and laser pointers are the solution. Maybe we have figured this out already because people don't want to swing their arm to choose a gameplay option. They want to press a button to do that, and they're used to minimal physical motion to do that. So there's that trade-off, right? If you want a world of dials and switches, you need the trade-off of it will be physically more annoying for the user to do.
Right.
Than moving their mouse and clicking a button. And I think people are not willing to admit those trade-offs, right? So if you standardize around, let's make it as efficient and system-like as possible. Laser pointers, you just have to move your wrist a little bit. There's, you know, like all of that. Well, that's great, but then why is it even VR? And then on the other hand, it's like, well, let's make this fully like product design, like you're working a machine. Well, then isn't that wasting a lot of the user's time, especially if it's not gameplay activity? And I think people maybe are trying to solve the problem rather than trying to pick a side. Is that a fair assessment?
I think I don't necessarily know how to answer that question, but I can answer in a kind of a broader stroke here. Sure. Right? I don't think you have to make those sacrifices, because the other thing you're allowed is to not exist in a perfect geometry world. Mm-hmm. Right. And we do this all the time. So yes, if you lay out every option to the game in every menu, right, and you have this huge line of buttons, it turns into that like Pixar short with the alien with like a million switches trying to figure out which switch, right? And it is exhausting, but you don't have to live in that world, right? The buttons can be as big or small as you want, and you can also flip things all the time. So in Cosmonius High, we have a backpack, and it has a zipper, and it changes the face of the backpack. Mm-hmm. People are willing to see that. So it's like a little mix of like you're switching which screen you're in. It's almost like a different tab.
Yeah.
But it uses the physical medium.
Right. And, right.
And I think to the point of the laser pointer versus so if you think the best way to think of this is in the most abstract, right? A single button in a laser pointer feels kind of crappy versus a single button that you hit, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, we know this, right? Light switches haven't gone away. There's lots of like physical, mechanical interactions that we perform in this universe that have not just vanished overnight, even with the fact that we could turn all our light switches into touchscreens.
Yeah. Right.
Nothing is stopping us. They're out there. You could go buy them today.
Yeah.
But I think there's a balance to be had there where you could take the lessons of user experience and the lessons, you know, the product lessons, right? We made everyone at Alchemy a year ago, if they want to opt in, read The Design of Everyday Things.
I was just thinking Donald about Norman's that book.
It's Donald Norman's book. And if you ever want to make anything, you should read that. Mm-hmm. Because the way it describes intent versus error is like second to none. And then it breaks your brain and you walk around and yell at things all day.
Yes.
This could be better, right?
You could never walk through a door again.
Right. But the point is it's iterative and the process is iterative, and you can take the lessons that you have learned in UX, right? So three clicks, right? We know this. Three clicks is the maximum that people are going to do. Mm-hmm. Fine. It's three interactions, right? Mm-hmm. We can do that. We could surface the 99% of things. Literally, I had this conversation with my developers 2 weeks ago, right? Where we were building a thing and whatever we're working on next that I can't talk about. And but that thing that we're building, I was like, the first thing you need to show me is the thing I want to do the most.
Yeah.
Just like Twitter shows the timeline first.
Right.
Right. Back in the day, before I was at Alchemy, I worked at a consulting firm. I made the IRS's app. So if you ever use the IRS's app, like I made that app, right? I didn't update. And like we had this big argument with the IRS, as me as this consultant. And I was like, everybody just wants to know where their refund is. And they're like, that's crap. We should put a menu. And they actually said, we're going to think outside the box and put a menu up. And
I was
like,
okay.
This is chaos. But we got them to do it. They're like 99.9% of people open the IRS app and say, I want to know where's my refund. And so why don't we just put that screen up first? And so even today, if you go on the IRS's IRS to go, you click on it, it will pop up the where's my refund screen. But the same thing applies in VR. Just because it's a physical switch, I don't think changes the why, right?
Yeah.
Just don't design that. Like our character creator in Vacation Simulator is all buttons, but it's almost like it's on a treadmill, right? So you like roll through these buttons.
Yeah.
You're not stuck with like 120 you know, hairstyles.
Yeah.
And then we made it playful. That's the other thing you can do in VR that you can't do. Mm-hmm. Like it plays like tones. So it's actually like fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Any drawback from having to like hold your arms up as you interact, you can pay for that by giving the user, the playful interactions, making it more enjoyable to engage with, which again comes from product design, right? To like make something less annoying to use, make it more fun to use.
Yeah.
You know?
And ergonomics are real and they still apply, right?
Yeah.
And movies suck. Don't use movies for inspiration, right? Mm-hmm. That's number one.
Yes.
Every time I've talked to a studio and they're like, we made Iron Man or we made Minority Report, which was around forever and ever, and thank God is dead and gone. We did Minority Report. You're like, oh, no. Tom Cruise, a man who lifts weights all day, can hold his arms up for 8 minutes straight. Yes, of course he can, right? The rest of us can't.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It still matters, right? We haven't started putting our keyboards vertical yet.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the biggest failure that I've experienced in that is Microsoft HoloLens's AirTap. Did you ever use that?
Yes.
You have to just hold your, because it has to be within the field of vision of the camera. Your hand is in front of you, and you just hold it out like it's a mouse cursor, and you tap. And the tapping is not so difficult. It's just your arm gets tired very quickly.
Yeah.
And moving your hand in and out, you know, to drop your hand when you don't need it. But you keep your hand up because you might need it in any moment. And it's just such a poorly, like, I'm sure it was a compromise, but it felt to me like a noble failure in an interaction attempt. It turned a lot of people off of that kind of interaction for AR stuff, like the sort of controller free, you know, before the world of, you know, before we do proper finger tracking, right?
Well, and I think that was really the trick that Meta has done really well, right? Mm-hmm. To give them kudos is, if you ever are a person who's done a lot of AR, right, you have this very specific pinch pickup thing, right, where you hold your hand a little sideways, a little up, a little out, and you pinch items, because that's the way you know the camera can see you closing. And for years, every headset, HoloLens, the headset that was called Meta before Meta became Meta, right?
Yeah.
All those
so confusing.
Like pinch to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
And figuring out how to do a grab, how to see a closed hand when it's not facing you is like that's the game changer. That makes it feel real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Okay, so we're going to put this little thing in the middle of the show here, somewhere in the middle, and I don't know exactly where, but I'm certain by now listeners will have already appreciated the content that we've gotten from our guests so far today.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you should know that we get cool guests like that because we have a guest booker whose name is Max, and he's here right now. Max!
Max!
Hi.
It's Max.
Hey. Hi, I'm Max.
We dragged Max to the middle of the program to make you all feel guilty about not being a patron of the show, because Patreon is how we pay Max
Absolutely.
To do the job.
Yes.
And if you appreciate the fact that we can get cool guests, you know, you should be appreciating Max, one.
Mm-hmm.
And two, you should be paying his salary.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is modest, but you know, if we could pay Max some more, we could ask him to do more stuff.
That's true. That's the thing.
Max, what more would you like to do for the show if we could afford more from you?
Oh man, that is a big question. I don't know. That's on my head.
Well, you really put him on the spot, Bart.
I know. I wasn't expecting an answer. Listeners, if you give us some money,
go to space together, yeah.
We're going to space.
Right. Yes, to the moon.
Right, that's our ultimate goal, is a seat on the Bezos rocket
right.
for Max.
No, we got to go to the ISS directly.
Yep.
Nice Games Club on location.
In space. It is a real benefit to the program. Right. Since we started doing it, we got a couple of folks coming in and helping us fund initiatives like, you know, new equipment or regular subscriptions that we have to maintain to run the show, or in this case, our subscription to Max. And the only way that happens is if some number of listeners toss us some coin.
Right.
So where could they do that?
You can go to patreon.com/nicegamesclub.
Ellen?
patreon.com/nicegamesclub.
Max, do you agree?
Yeah, I think patreon.com/nicegamesclub. That's pretty good.
Head there now and keep Max employed.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
So what's coming in the future then? What's coming down the pipeline? Yeah.
I think we think at Alchemy, we think there's a lot of potential in hand tracking.
Right? Oh yeah.
Okay.
And that's, I've been kind of poking at it a little bit, so yeah, we can dig into it. Right. Mm-hmm. I want to address that. Whenever I say this, the number one thing that always comes up, so I'm just going to jump right in front of it. Does me saying I think hand tracking is the future mean that I think controllers are dead? No, I don't. We still type on a keyboard. We still click with a mouse. There's a time and place for everything, right?
Yes.
Yeah. There are still games that are incredibly, incredibly popular, like Fortnite, on the phone that use on-screen controls, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying it's dead, but what I'm saying is that I can see it becoming the preferred method of interaction for most things in VR. And the reason why is friction, right? So one of the biggest uphill battles we face in VR is VR is closer to a physical activity than it is to a passive activity, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And our biggest fight is mentally the time that you decide you want to do VR till the time you get exhausted of thinking about doing VR, right? And so back in the day, it was like, I want to do VR. Now I got to spend 30 minutes like tinkering with a bunch of Steam settings. But hopefully the stars align and then nobody DMs me on Twitter because that notification blasts everything, right? and now we have the Quest, and it's a lot easier, right? You just put it in the headset, but you still have to have the controllers. And right, if Quest is like, last they reported, like 10 million users, right? The phone has 4.5 billion users, mm-hmm. right? So if, and that's what they're looking at, right? I don't think I'm surprising anybody when I'm saying like, Meta would love to say we have 4.5 billion VR users.
Right? Yeah.
They would love to also say they're all on Quest, but.
Yeah. Right.
So with that, right, when you're looking at how do you reach that audience, telling somebody to put in a blindfold and then touch B requires a subset of knowledge that's so deep, right, that it's like it's ingrained into some of a generation, mm-hmm. but like, you know, my wife and my parents didn't grow up playing video games. Both are different, right? My wife and I are almost the exact same age. Mm-hmm. My parents are older, right? They predate like the majority of video games, mm-hmm. right? And so for them, once they put on the headset, when you say press B, right, they literally have to like lift it up or look through the nose,
yeah,
because mm-hmm. it's a blindfold, right? And,
yeah,
and use the sticks in this. Like, this is a complicated set of things that you're talking about. But when you say hand tracking, the interaction method is so straightforward. Right. And now the friction is less. You don't even have to find controllers. Mm-hmm. You just use your hands that you've been using. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot of potential when you look at that. And there's a lot of potential in put on the headset, put your hands out and play.
Yeah.
Right. Now, are there always going to be the Call of Duties, the Onwards, right? Those kind of things. Yes, absolutely. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Or something that needs this like ultra, ultra precision. Right.
Yeah.
But I think that what you're going to see is, it'll be easier to adopt. And then honestly, just from a hardware manufacturer's perspective, if you can make a SKU that doesn't have a bunch of controllers in it, that's an expense you don't incur.
Yeah.
Right.
It's
right.
Just less money
yep.
that it costs.
Yep.
And then you make the controllers a peripheral. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things. The other things that I see, right, are face tracking and eye tracking. And those are big. Now, I think the thing that people get into is they get really excited about eye tracking, and I think they're wrong for why they're excited.
Okay.
They should be excited, but it's not as exciting as it seems, right?
Sure.
Because a lot of times people are like, "Oh, gaze tracking, like we know where you look, so we can use those for menus and stuff." But the thing about the way that your eyes work, so like the point of this podcast is going to be to break everyone's brain so they never use their body correctly from this point forward.
That was my goal. Yeah, that was my goal.
So that's how it's got to be. Yeah. So your eyes, whether or not you realize it, never stay still. They actually like scan the room and quickly build an image and do all sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's called caustics if you're an animator where you have to make the eyes wiggle all the time. And so if you say to somebody, like, you need to hold your eyes on this menu item for, like, 5 seconds, it's torture.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? It's just not natural. But what it's good for is something called foveated rendering, which is, like, if we know where we're looking, we can make the little spot in your eye called the fovea, which is where all the cells are. We can, like, render that really high detail and render everything else really low detail.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Quest currently does it. It's called fixed foveated rendering. So that outside ring is, like, a little bit blurrier than the inside rings. Okay. But if we know where you're looking, we can be even more precise, and therefore we can just push the hardware that's a little bit less powerful, you can push it much further.
Yep.
So
yeah.
That's exciting about that. Yeah. But what's more exciting to me is obviously I want more pixels, but
you know, that's exciting.
So what's more exciting is face tracking. I think that's gonna really unlock multiplayer, right? What can VR do that other medium can't, right? And multiplayer, other media does fabulous, right? We know this. Mm-hmm. I mean, Among Us is super popular. There's not a whole lot going on with those little characters, but they're, you know, you get an incredible range of emotion and lots of stuff, right? VR allows for a little bit more precise motion, but once you also start tracking the face, you're talking about getting actual expression. That's going to be a game changer.
Yeah,
right? When, because what do we have to do to get actual expression right now? We have to like do a Zoom call or a Discord call or something. We have to sit in front of a camera and we have to do all these things and make sure our lighting's right and all the boxes of shit are moved away
or at least blurred out.
but you know, once you're in there, if you had like cameras pointed at your face to actually show your expressions, you can really do some interesting things in terms of social dynamics and interaction in VR that you couldn't before, even at the single player level.
Yeah.
As crazy as that sounds, right? Like that would change the VTuber game.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
It's you just wear the headset. Don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. You play your game, you wear the headset. So That's really exciting. I think you're going to see a lot more. I'm hoping the headsets move lighter, right?
Yeah.
Lighter, cooler, and longer battery life is really what we want out of there. And I hope that there's other competitors. Not that I have a vendetta against anybody, you know, Meta specific, you know, I like Meta, right? We're on Meta.
Honestly, who else could you be referring to?
Right.
No. I like that. Their headset's awesome, right? It's pushed the industry super far forward. But it's good to have competition, right?
We don't
need to end up in like the Internet Explorer era where it's like, web browsers just aren't moving forward forever because there's the one.
Right? Yeah, especially
all the rest.
Especially since there are, like, you know, we've been talking about for 50 minutes, so many interesting problems that need to be solved. Having some competition is going to help move that space forward.
Yep.
Like you said.
And you talk about the, like you say, you're not saying controllers will go away, but hand tracking and like, quick in and out and cheaper devices, like that is what's going to unlock the bigger market, which will attract those competitors. Because it seems like, well, the market's so small, you should be able to get into it. But the players that are in it are pretty big and hard to compete with.
Yeah.
And the market's small enough that the potential for getting a 20% market share is not so high. You have to be in it for the long haul.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, even like Vive, which was the standard, you know, the one people recommended above all others, is not as big a player anymore. And I don't know what it will take for there to be more competitors other than the market just being bigger. And that requires things that are not just hardcore games. Like that may be what pushed things forward. But yeah, it's sort of like the difference between not even just phone versus console or whatever, but just general purpose computing versus video games. Like, I think a lot of people have predicted VR will be a good use for general purpose computing. But I think it's way too much of a hurdle right now. And it to attract? So like, do you have, I mean, I think you, like you said, you want more competitors, but what do you think it will take?
So, well, there is an enormous startup cost, right? So, while there's like a small market share and high excitement, right? So you have this like emerging industry, and I'll try to stay away from like getting too into weird business jargon, but so you have the setup for that, but you have this really high startup cost, and the really high startup cost is the amount of machine learning,
and expertise
it takes to do that, right? Mm-hmm. So to do inside out tracking takes like tons and tons of machine learning to basically build models that can, you know, use four cameras to figure out where you're physically positioned in a world.
Yeah.
That's all. And then add in, oh, by the way, those same cameras can also track your hands and rebuild, basically functionally rebuild your hands as 3D models, right? So that takes a lot of startup costs. Now, there's always rumored headsets, but the ones that we know, right, that are physically in existence, right, is the Pico, I think, is one of the interesting headsets to watch, right, out of China. They're definitely like a new up and comer, and they're kind of building a more, if Meta is Apple with its closed ecosystem, Pico is Android with a more like, here's a platform, DIY your headset, right? Mm-hmm. Some other person can build off of that if they want it. Yeah, and then we're, you know, our eyes are on PlayStation PSVR 2. Very excited for that. Obviously, that one is like definitely controller focused, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because PlayStation, right? Which is great. Yeah. But yeah, very excited to see how that turns out and where that goes, and just, you know, they get to do some things as a tethered headset that the standalones don't, mm-hmm. right? Really harness the computing power of the PlayStation.
Right, right. And that you have a kind of an expectation that it's going to be like, yeah, it's VR, but it's part of your game console, so you're going to be in your living room probably. There's some a little bit less the consumer has to like figure out for themselves. Mm. There's some assumptions that between you and the platform maker that might help them a little bit there. So I think the next question for a developer is, what are the developer tools and workflows? And like, because I think about like there's a VRTK is an open source or maybe it was open source, but like a toolkit that could target different SDKs. And that was a game changer for a lot of indies, like making VR games and game jams. Like you could get started regardless of what equipment you had.
Right.
But I wonder where is that going? Like, what are the standards for workflows? How is the tooling going to get better? Will it be easier to be able to, I mean, inside out tracking's helped a lot, but will it be easier to do the work at your desk, going in and out of a VR environment? Like, those are all these barriers to the developer that are similar to the barriers to a player, but kind of they're higher barriers, but you have higher motivation. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't quite meet the same, but, where do you see the future of that going? Cause it's one thing to get new players, but we need new developers.
Right.
The era we're in right now is like the custom engine era, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, sure, VRTK exists. I'm not even sure what state it's in. Alchemy has its own thing.
Yeah.
And so do many others, right? Turbo Button, friend studio of ours, they released their interaction called T-Bot.
Yeah. Right? It's really good.
Right? So it's great. It's fantastic, right? They built their games off. So the thing is, it's basically, you know, we're still in this early, early day. Mm-hmm. And I think that you're going to see somebody emerge. But this is what I was talking about, right? We have this stalemate where nobody really wants to be the one to do it. Right?
Yeah.
Like they all kind of have a little bit. And so the thing is, it's at what level of abstraction does it exist, right? And so the Oculus stuff, they have poses for your hands now where they're like, we predetermine like poses, like the okay symbol or peace or whatever, right? But nobody's really taken that step and said like, we're going to provide a button and this is how a button works. And by and large, that's because there is a split, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of who is making what and how that plays out, right? And so arguably you could say, you know, it's the engine maker's problem because they're the ones making the engines and they should, and ultimately that's where it is implemented, right? Much in the same way that like bootstrap on the web is a web problem, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or you could say that it's a Oculus problem, but you know, Oculus would counter and or Meta would counter and say, you know, hey, the only thing that we really control is this like C++ API. So I think it's going to be interesting. I think that goes back to my Horizon thing, mm-hmm. and my larger, kind of the larger trend of the industry, right, is that we're seeing a lot of these like games as service models being built up, right? And you can look at it as a gradient, right? So on one side is the make a game and drop it on our service, but it's whatever it is. And that's like Xbox, right? Mm-hmm. That's where they're at. Make a game however you want, whatever you want, as long as you meet our requirements. On the extreme other end is you know, these, they call themselves metaverses. Before that, they were virtual worlds, whatever you want to call them, right? And so you have like Rec Room, mm-hmm. and you have, you know, Horizon, right? And these are, we give you the toolkit, and Roblox. Roblox is like great. Mm-hmm. We give you the toolkit. Mm-hmm. Roblox is kind of in the, a little bit more in the middle because it's a little bit more like programming. It looks kind of like Unity in some ways, right? Mm-hmm. So what I'm curious is, like, I see a push. I don't know whether it will work. There's a part of me that hopes it doesn't, just so we can, because I like being able to have the freedom to build what I want to build and not be as restricted. Mm-hmm. But there is a push. How do you get more developers, right? You say like, cool, we have a fully you have two paths here. You can use Unity, use Unreal, but you're on your own.
Yeah.
You got to make a button, right? You got to put two colliders intersecting with each other and figure it out.
Yeah.
Or we got buttons, we got levers, we got dials, we got it all, but it's going to go on Horizon. We're going to take a bigger cut.
Yeah.
Right. And only people who access not just our headset, but this like larger ecosystem can use that. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I see the push. Right. And so part of it is like, why are many of these developers incentivized to put the work in? Right. Unity's not incentivized. They don't make a lot of money off of VR. That's not, I mean, I'm not saying that meanly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They make it. Unreal, same story, right? They don't make a lot of money off VR. There's just not a lot of VR right now. So they haven't reached the level. Maybe in the future, there will be enough VR that they'll be incentivized. Mm-hmm. Why would Valve, okay, we can talk about Valve. Valve's not incentivized because Valve's incentive structure is like, chaos.
Yeah. Yes.
Do whatever.
Yeah. There's no predicting what they will care about or do.
Yeah.
Right. And like, I love my Steam Deck, right? That thing is awesome, right? But if you'd asked me 4 years ago if Valve would make a handheld that plays PC games, I would have been like, oh, maybe. Yes.
Yeah.
It's a direction they could go in if they wanted.
Yeah.
Right? Like, mm-hmm. Like the arc there is too confusing. And the way they release open source software, which I totally respect, is the no warranties. We'll never update this. Here's the version.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe we'll update it someday, but it's only us. We accept no change requests. Good luck.
Yeah.
Fork it if you want it, right? Like, that's on you. And then, right? So thinking about the other players, right? There's very little incentive for a Meta to say, like, to build this whole toolkit so somebody else could go build something that would take you away from Horizon.
Yeah.
Right. And we've seen their vision, right, of the future. So if you ask me where the new developer pipeline is, the new developer pipeline's in Roblox. It's in these, you know, Rec Room, and it's in Horizon. Mm-hmm. Do I hope it's eventually broader than that? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I think those are very restricting. Mm-hmm. I think there's a place for that, right? Clearly there's a market. Clearly there's an audience. If I were like, Roblox sucks and this is stupid, like, we could talk about it, you know, if the shape of that is ethical and what it is, that's fine. But like, there is a market for like, can I make my little thing that exists within this world and put it in this broader world of things, right? Mm-hmm. But is that the only thing that should exist?
Yeah.
I don't think
that's
the only thing.
Yeah, you're just telling us what the weather looks like. You're not saying this is what the weather should be, because, you know.
Right, but exactly. I'm saying, like, if you look at where the money is, and if you look at where the effort is, right? Where is the next VRTK? Well, it's like, build your stuff in one of our like pre-boxed environments. But oh yeah, whereas before you may have got, you know, like the industry standard was 70% or some cut where the majority is going to you, mm-hmm. the scales of that is going to be very different for you.
Right, right. And I think that that's got to have a lot to do with the scale of the industry, because, I mean, starting in 2016, people were like, oh, it'll grow faster, it'll grow slow or whatever. But everyone's was operating under the end goal of when this eventually is big, what we're planning for it will be realized.
Yeah.
But I wonder, I mean, are we ready to admit a world where, like, the overall size of the VR market never goes beyond 50-100 million people, like users, ever? Or is everybody still thinking that we're in the early stage and eventually there will be 4 billion users?
I mean, I think these companies have to plan like it. I don't think you get 50% of your company's total value.
I think Meta's made it pretty clear that it's the big bet they're making,
but
sure.
I think by and large, right, if we're still moving towards these issues, that's what we're looking for, right? It's like making it. That said, right, is like there is some hundreds of millions that is the same size as the console market, right? When you really look at that, you know, phones as the 4.5 billion is like an extreme outlier, because you have to understand that like the phone in many areas of the world is a substitute for the computer,
right?
As a complete substitute. So
yeah.
Do I think VR will reach 4.5 billion people? Probably not. Mm-hmm. Do I think VR has a lot of headroom and might reach a billion people? I hope so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm banking on, right? That's the way we're thinking about this thing. And that's why I'm advocating for lower friction, things like that.
Yeah.
I think there's room for the niche, but I don't think it has to be exclusively the niche.
Right, right, right. Yeah, the small market can stay small, but it needs to be supported by a larger market with less friction. Right?
Yeah. And I think that there's a lot of people who are thinking like, you know, if you're a business, right, say you're a trillion dollar company and you are looking to capture whatever the next device is, because you don't own either of the devices that anybody uses, right? Either of the platforms, right? Once you start building that thing and you start realizing it's happening, how do you capitalize on it the most, right? And how do you funnel people into that? How do you create that environment? Those would be the type of things people are thinking of. And I think that's where some of the comparisons start getting really interesting, because when you look at the internet, right, which is the typical one we go back to, right? The internet was created by a bunch of like physics nerds. And then, well, it was created by a bunch of government folks who needed to shoot nukes remotely. We figured that out. And then a bunch of like nerds at CERN who are awesome were like, oh yeah, what if we put like words on the nuke?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like we could put words so you could go to that, and you know, that's so it just came from a different place, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the world that exists today is just not the one there. I don't know how deep you want to keep going on this philosophical journey I've taken you on, but I do think a lot about what the future is for development, and if that future is, you know, if I were in the business of making engines, I would be worried that the market that I shift, in the same way that like the chip manufacturer held all the power. Oh crap. Now the computer person holds all the power. Now this and cloud. And now we forgot the cloud. We're out in services land. Mm-hmm. Right. I would be worried that there's a potential shift where it's like, oh, I am just the commodity that is used by these other players. And those other players are the ones that control everything.
Right. Right.
Right. Intel used to sell a lot of chips to a lot of different varied businesses. Intel sells chips to a lot of very different businesses, but where they sell the most chips are Amazon, Microsoft, Google, right? Cloud computing people, right?
Yeah.
They've been pushed down the supply chain.
Yeah.
And so I'd be worried if I were like a Unity or an Unreal, that like, how do I prevent myself from being pushed on the supply chain. And Fortnite is a great example of how do you prevent that, right? Mm-hmm. You build a platform that, and then you strike gold.
Yeah. Just plan for
if all else fails, just strike gold.
Strike gold, and then you just quadruple down on it.
Yeah.
Totally, that's been my plan the whole time. Glad to know I'm on the right track.
Right. It's a mix of like the incentive structure of the people who will be your customers, the developers, and then the incentive structure that you want for your own goals as a company. Like, do we want to make the tools that help other people make their things? Like, there's some companies that have a lot of pride in taking that place in the market.
Right.
But a lot of the innovators who are trying to like move hardware forward and build new platforms, things that have never existed before, they don't want to be put in that position.
Yeah.
Even though they're the ones in the best position to make the things mm-hmm. that would put them in that position.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And I think that when you're looking at what the future is, it's like, don't think that this conversation isn't happening everywhere. Right.
Yeah.
And so if you own the platform right now, you're like, wow, what is the future of developers, and how do we get them to make our platform an essential, if not exclusive, right? How do we get exclusives in an age where exclusivity is like almost trite, right?
Yeah.
And I think all those platform holders are asking the same thing, right? And so Microsoft's solution is just like, I don't know, we just back up the money truck and keep buying companies, right? If we own the company, we own Bethesda now. Nobody can release Bethesda games except Microsoft. We own Activision, right? And that's one solution, right? Mm-hmm. And Epic's solution is we build the game of all games that's an unstoppable juggernaut. And Oculus' solution or Meta's solution is we build a platform that is the easiest way to launch content, mm-hmm. right? And these are all just like different ways of solving the same problem.
Yeah. And they're all from the developer perspective, the end user for a lot of the tools and platforms, you always feel like you're on the verge of some rug being pulled from out from under you, where one of those companies' master plan will be deployed. And you don't know.
Right.
So you don't know if it's like, should I be published? Should I be using these services? Should I be like all the things that Epic is doing that is very developer friendly is a result of their position that Fortnite got them. But that is also something you kind of wish they weren't doing. And so you kind of like, well, if that's and with the way you've talked about Meta, I think is the way a lot of developers feel about Meta, which is like it's really hard to go all in on what their vision is, even in spite of the things they have delivered for the industry and VR as a medium, because you'd never quite know what if you're in their plans.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's not I mean, you know, I think that you see these different philosophies. So that's not to say that they've done anything. I'm not trying to put a value judgment on.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's just skittishness.
So I think, you know, when you're looking at these things, you have to look at it, but there is going to be, if Horizon pops off, right, there's going to be somebody, some developer like Roblox that saw it. Right. And mm-hmm. they got there first, and they get to be, you know, like the early YouTubers or the early of any of those people on these platforms where they're, you know, we talk about the difference between, right, like a gaining user problem and an incumbency problem, mm-hmm. right? At some point it will switch to an incumbent problem where you're trying to, the user peak, right? Like YouTube is not gonna, they'll gain more users, but it's not like there's an untapped group of people who's not watching YouTube.
Yeah.
That you can strike gold with, right?
Yeah.
So if you want to get big, you have to take an existing user base and either add them to you or take them from someone. Mm-hmm. Right? And so it's when we're looking at the future of VR, right? You have this complicated tool chain, you have this incredibly technically difficult platform, and then you have a company that's investing ungodly sums of money in making these things easy for us.
Right.
You know, I can see the argument there, which is like, if we're going to make your stuff run at 90 frames per second on mobile hardware that we ripped apart and put in front of your face with two screens at the same time, and we're going to build all these buttons and stuff, like, we did a lot of the work here, right? So you know, we kind of want you to be locked in a little bit.
Yeah. And yeah, a lot of those trade off, like a lot of that transaction, you write it all down. It balances. Like, that is a fair trade. But it doesn't always mean you're going to go for it.
Yeah.
Right. And, and I think the counterstatement is, if you want to go it alone, like, Unity's out there, right? If you want to really, really go it alone, C++ is out there. Go nuts. Have a ball, right? Mm-hmm. But it all depends on your level, right? So Alchemy, mm-hmm. When we launched Cosmology Site, we had 20 people, and we now have 50 some people. Mm. And our launch Cosmology Site at 30 some, now we have 50 some. And so we have the might to do it. But if I were when Alchemy started in 2016, we were a 4-person studio, right? When we started 2010. When we started the VR thing in 2014, 2015, we were a 4-person studio. It was such early days that literally anything you did was the first and was innovative.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so at that point, you don't need the might, right, to continue. But I think to continue the innovation, you're going to need a lot. You just need a lot more.
Yeah.
Yep.
You've climbed.
I don't mean to be a downer. I think, you know.
No.
Well, it's like any developer.
I sound a little down, but it's just like, let's play this out a little further, which should make people feel better. Almost all the industries then eventually slide and open source happens, right?
Yeah.
And then it gets better. So if you look at like 3D modeling, right, same thing happened. Mm-hmm. You had an industry where you had a bunch of players and everybody had a completely different styles. It's all over the place. This is chaos, right? Daz 3D, like, I don't know, Pandas 3D, right? Some guy in a back of his truck at a PDS selling you like a bunch of diskettes that make 3D models, right? And then eventually it starts to consolidate and you end up with the Autodesks of the world, and you have this like very standardized 3D platform, but it's very expensive and there's a lot of cost to you. And then in parallel, in 1997, this little piece of software called Blender kicks off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 20 years later, it eventually reaches a level of maturity where even big studios and movie studios, you know, VFX studios are going like, hey, maybe this Blender thing is the right way. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the thing, is like, at some point, right, in the long game of economics, everything becomes a commodity, right?
Yeah.
So at some point, you know, we're like, now it's this, because that investment is high. But at some point, that stuff is going to become, computing power will go up, open source folks will figure it out. And then eventually, like, the VRTK that was weird and janky, the VRTK of the future will come in and it'll be like, oh, well, this is just as easy as it was to do Horizon.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's open source now, so I don't need to, like, take on the MIT license instead of taking on the Meta end user license.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess the pessimistic view is like, well, it kind of has to get bad before those tools get good enough to draw away people. But it is a consistent pattern in a lot of different industries.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is something to look forward to. But I think like...
Crit is out there. Like, this is just the way that these things go. And so for a little while, the cost is so high to get it there that it's going to go to the big players.
Yeah. Well, you're saying like, you know, it sort of ends on a downer, but I think a lot of times when you go down the rabbit hole at any topic, and like, even when you were getting to some of those final points, it's like, this is so applicable to so many other areas of game dev, like not specific to VR or not specific to new technologies. And it kind of just is like, it's how every topic is the same. It's like game dev hard, yo. Like, it's just,
yeah.
And so if you're feeling that, then like, it's important to know that like, even the chief operating owl of Alchemy feels that way too.
Yeah, and I think that's a general current trend for the industry.
Right? Yeah.
And so that's kind of like what, you know, when we're thinking of things where our heads are at. Does that mean that bespoke games are going to go away? Absolutely not, right? But the thing is, you can't look at a player base the size of Roblox and just write it off.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. It's now there, right? Mm-hmm. You can't look at a player base the size of Fortnite. I'd argue that Fortnite and Roblox are on the same continuum. That's one of those opinions. But I have this like a continuum of user generated to like bespoke, but still one like virtual world.
Yeah.
But we see the push happening there.
The last thing we do whenever we have somebody on the show is we ask, you know, where can listeners find you on the internet? But I want to preface that question by saying, where can people find Cosmonius High on the internet, and why should they go look it up?
So, Cosmonius High's most fun presence on the internet is going to be our TikTok account.
Nice. Okay.
TikTok. So all the teenagers in the audience.
TikTok. Hey, for game devs out there.
Oh yeah, no, I've heard it.
TikTok. Yep. TikTok.
Yeah.
That's all. There's no better. It's a lot of work, right? I'm not going to pretend like it's not, right? Because you're doing these vertical videos, play to the format, but the reward is awesome. Mm-hmm. And the community there is super hype and it's so fun. So TikTok account at Alchemy Labs. And then we have Cosmonius High's Twitter account. We also have our Facebook, Alchemy Labs again. That's where you can find Cosmonius High. And then we have our Discord. You can come chat. And that's Alchemy Labs Discord. You can find that. So I pop in there occasionally. Very occasionally, but we also have a lot of our developers are there. The cool. Alchemy is not a huge company, so we're all hanging around. Mm.
We will link to all those things in the show notes. So I'm very excited for the Cosmonius High TikTok account. So I might have to go check that out tonight. Yeah. That's our show. For show notes and links on today's topic, go to our website, nicegames.club. Bleb. Visit us on Twitter at nicegamesclub, or Dale tweets about game dev resources and UV mapping. Like ultraviolet mapping? I don't know.
No, it's not as boring as it sounds, I promise.
Okay, all right. We like hearing from you, so tweet back or email us, contact@nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. Next week, we'll be looking at inspiration from behavioral economics and Game Maker. But that's it for this week.
So, until we start again, remember to
play nice.
Bleb. And make nice.
Right. And you know they're going to know what a cross button is, or a square button, or a circle button. Right?
Yeah, so. Yeah. So,
by the way, the trigger is called the T button.
Yeah,
we have,
and that comes from the Move controllers, right?
Yeah. And I don't know if they still call it in the PSVR2, but yeah, the Move controllers were the T button, and so we were like, "Come on, it's the trigger." The
one. Yeah,
like, no, it is the T button.
Oh yeah, okay. You
respect the T button. Respect like, the T button.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.